Before I begin this lesson, I want to mention, I guess this is sort of a Christmas gift, I think. Richard and Jan Scow are with us this morning. She's sitting right back over here. She told me this is her second Sunday to be here, and what a great blessing it is to have her back again. We're glad you're here. I want to ask you if you know this person. As when I found that picture earlier this week, I was thinking, what percentage of the congregation might know this man? I was thinking, if you're 60 and above, there might be a good chance that you know who this is. This man, his occupation was running a grocery store. This was his grocery store. And he associated with a man by the name of John Walton. And his wife's name was Cora Beth. That is Ike Godsey, who was the man, the friendly grocer on Walton's Mountain. And those of you who have heard me preach and teach have heard of my hometown. But I grew up in New Home, Texas, population 211. And we had two grocery stores in New Home, Texas. We had Mayfield's Grocery and we had Davies Grocery. And I think they were probably grocery stores a little bit like Ike Godsey's grocery store. The Browns shopped at Mayfield's Grocery. I'm not sure why. We had two choices. We shopped at Mayfield's. But in the back of Mayfield's Grocery, I can remember there was a little, I guess you'd call it a little bit of a butcher shop. There was a container that cooled meat or kept meat cool. And Mr. Mayfield was the one who served as the butcher. And you could buy cold cuts and you could buy some meat at the back of that grocery store. It was probably in a grocery store like Mayfield's or Ike Godsey's that this story took place. Probably a little country store. The owner of the store, he knew all of his customers. He knew them well, and they knew him well. And on this particular day, one of the ladies from the community was shopping and getting something, some meat. The one thing that she wanted was a chicken. And so he took her back to where the cold cuts were and where he had his meat. He looked down in the container, which she couldn't see, and behind, there was one chicken. And so he reached down, he got the chicken, he put it on the scales, and she looked at it, and she said, "Well, I've got a lot of company coming. I need a little bit bigger chicken than that." And so then he made his fateful decision. He took the chicken, he put it back down in the container, and then he started reaching around looking for the second chicken. He grabbed the first chicken that he had, the only chicken he had. He put it back on the scales. This time he just left his thumb resting on the scale a little bit, and it was heavier. She said, "Oh, I'll take that chicken." And so he took it off the scales, and he was wrapping it up. And she was kind of talking to herself as he was wrapping it up, and she was thinking how many people were coming for their special occasion. And she said, "You know," just as he got it all wrapped up and handed it to her, he said, "You know, I've just been thinking, I've got a lot of family who are coming in. I think I'll go ahead and take that other chicken too." Guilty. Caught in the act. I mean, here he is facing a woman that he has known and he serves on a regular basis. And how is he going to explain that that chicken has disappeared? Have you ever been caught in an action where you were really embarrassed? Let me tell you one more. When we were Most of the congregation knows that we spent time in New Zealand in the 1980s teaching in a school called the South Pacific Bible College. In the 90s, when we were in Lubbock at Greenlawn, we decided to take our family and a group back to New Zealand. We were there for about 2 weeks, and we did some door knocking, and I taught a class at the school. And toward the end of the trip, we made a trip across the island to Napier, where three of our graduates were working together, men I had taught in the Bible college, working at Napier, the church there. And on the Saturday night, I was going to preach the next night, Sunday night. Chris Miller, one of my former students, and his wife was one of my former students, we were staying at their house. And after supper, we decided to go for a walk. And we came across the sports complex in Napier, and they were having a basketball game. And I said, well, let's go in. I mean, it's probably past halftime. Let's go in and see if they'll let us watch the game, the end of the game. We walked in. We talked to the man at the front counter about just going in and watching the end of the game. He said, no, you'll have to pay full admission if you go into the game. And we said, okay. We walked out the door, and I said to Chris, let's just walk around and see if there's another entrance. And so he followed me, and we actually walked through the kitchen area where people were working. And we came to these curtains, and we opened them. And sure enough, there was the game. And there were lots of seats that were open. And in Lubbock, Texas, I was always accustomed to going in after halftime, and the gates were open. So I said, come on, Chris. And we started walking up the steps to get a seat. And suddenly, I heard this loud voice go, hey, you guys! I think everyone in the arena heard it. And we stopped in our tracks, and as we sheepishly turned back around, it was the fellow we'd been talking to in the lobby. And so we slinked down the stairs like little kids caught with our hands in the cookie jar, and had a conversation with him back at that front desk. And I admitted to him, you know, I was the ugly American, and I had been used to doing this back at home, going into games after halftime. And after a few minutes of conversation, he said, well, y'all go on in. But here I was, a returning preacher, returning teacher, and I led my former student into sin. I was embarrassed. I finally have the courage to tell that now that it's about 50 years ago. But I did tell the congregation the next night about what we had done. But we were definitely caught in the act. The lesson this morning is about one of Jesus' most prominent disciples. Familiar story. You'll know it well. But he is caught in sin. He's guilty. I want us to look at four texts from the life of Peter. Peter and Jesus on the final night that Jesus spent on this earth. And the verses will be on the screen, but the first text is out of Matthew. Matthew chapter 26, if you'd like to read in your Bible, or you can see these words on the being projected. These words immediately follow the Last Supper. Jesus has just broken bread with his apostles, and they've taken the cup, and he's told them the future significance of this bread and this cup. And they sang a hymn, and they went out to the Mount of Olives. And then you read these verses, starting verse 31. Then Jesus told them, this very night you will all fall away on account of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. I want you just to think for a moment what those words that Jesus spoke to them, as those words penetrated for these apostles, what it must have felt like. This very night, you will all fall away from me. Well, here's Peter's reaction, verse 33. Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." He's certain. That will not happen. But then Jesus speaks to Peter and says, "I tell you the truth. This very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." Peter says, "I'll die first." And then Jesus says to him, "Peter, you're going to disown me three times tonight. Not just one time, but three times." And Peter declared, arguing with Jesus, as he is somewhat accustomed to doing, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." Notice in what he says, in the two times that Peter speaks there, he uses the word "never" both times. "I never will," he says in verse 33, and he says, "I will never disown you." Never. And there's one more verse at the end of this. Have you ever noticed this? "And all the other disciples said the same." I mean, we pay attention to Peter and his failure, but the rest of the disciples chimed in and said that we're with Peter. We'll never disown you. The second text is from Luke chapter 22. So if you want to turn to that passage, Luke chapter 22, verses 31 to 34. And according to Luke's gospel, Jesus has something very specific that he tells Peter. Because he is banking on Peter to be a leader of this group. And so before the betrayal, before the denial, he says to him these words. Luke 22, starting at verse 31. "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat." Satan wants you, 11, my closest associates. He wants to sift you like wheat. In other words, he wants to sort of turn your worlds upside down. "But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith will not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers." Peter replied, "Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death." Jesus answered, "I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny three times that you know me." And so the prediction, the same prediction about his denial is made recorded by Luke. But he gives us this little information that is not recorded by Matthew, that Jesus had forewarned Peter that Satan is after you as a group, but I'm depending on you, Peter. When you have returned, in other words, when you have come back from this failure that you're about to have, I want you to strengthen your brothers. I'm depending upon you. And of course, Peter says, "I'm going to prison with you first. I'll go to death with you first." No, Peter, tonight you will deny three times that you know me. The next passage is in the same chapter, and it gives us the details of this denial. Turn to verses 54 through 62. Then seizing Jesus, so in between the time that Jesus has warned his disciples about what is going to happen, he is arrested in the garden. He is seized and he is taken, led away, it says. They led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance. When they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat down with them. A servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, This man, he was with him. He was with Jesus. But Peter denied it. Woman, I do not know him, he said. A little while later, someone else saw him and said, You also are one of them. Man, I am not, Peter replied. It's interesting to me, in verse 59, Luke records about an hour later. So Peter has been here for a little while. About an hour later, another asserted, Certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter replied, Man, I don't know what you're talking about. And just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. The words that Jesus had spoken, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times, have happened. It has happened. And this text ends with these words. Luke is the only one who records verses 61 and 62. Then the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him, Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. I asked Otis to lead in the hour of trial just before the lesson. I'm not sure at what point in my life it occurred to me that this song is a reminder of what happened with Peter. But at some point, I remembered this text. In the hour of trial, Jesus plead for me, lest by base denial I depart from thee. When thou seest me waver, with a look recall, nor for fear nor favor suffer me to fall. That's not the end of Peter and Jesus' relationship, of course. I mean, here Peter has to live with his failure for a few days. I mean, the last look that he has from Jesus is when he has spoken the words, I don't know him. I have nothing to do with him. No, I'm not one of his disciples. Three times he has denied Jesus. And the last thing that he has seen is Jesus turn and look at him. He weeps. I wonder what the hours over the next few days were like until the resurrection. And even when the resurrection occurred, you wonder how he felt about encountering Jesus, having to come face to face with him again, as someone who had just really fallen flat on his face, who had failed. Well, on one of those occasions, when he is face to face with Jesus, John records what happened. John chapter 21. Losing stuff. John chapter 21. Jesus has been fishing and has come ashore, and they have had breakfast together. And in John chapter 21, verses 15 to 17, there is this exchange between Jesus and Peter, which Jesus initiates. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, and it looks like, as you read this text, it looks like the rest of the apostles, or those who are gathered there on this occasion, are hearing this exchange. Or maybe it's possible they were a little bit out of earshot. But here's what Jesus says to Peter. Simon, son of John, do you really love me more than these? The question is, what did Jesus mean when he said, do you love me more than these? Now, those who write commentaries and those who give their opinions on this, they offer at least more than one idea. One idea is that when he says, do you love me more than these, maybe Jesus turned toward the boats and the nets and all the fishing gear that had been a part of Peter's life, his entire life. Do you really love me more than what you have given your life to, all of your life, the fishing business? A second suggestion, and one that seems logical to me because of what Peter had said in their conversation on the night of the denial, that Jesus may have said, Peter, do you really love me more than these? Talking about the other disciples who are there. You remember Peter had said, I don't care what the rest of them do, I will never deny you. The rest of them may turn away from you, but I'll die first. And now Jesus is looking at him and possibly saying, do you love me more than your fellows here? These men that you're associated with. Peter's response is, yes, Lord. You know that I love you. And Jesus says, basically what Jesus is saying to Peter throughout this conversation, Peter, I'm not finished with you. I have work for you. I have a mission for you. Feed my lambs. But he doesn't just do it once. He goes on. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time, he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Peter teaches us a lot, I believe. And not just this one event, of course. You know, as we study the life of Peter and his encounters with Jesus and what they experienced together and how he responded, the life of Peter is a fascinating thing in the Gospels as well as in the book of Acts. And he teaches us a lot when we read what he has left behind for us in his writings in 1st and 2nd Peter, the epistles. But one of the things I think that he teaches us is how dangerous it is for us to have such a strong opinion of ourselves. I mean, he was really full of bluster and boisterous kind of expression. Lord, comparing himself with the others, I don't care what they do, I know what I'm going to do. Have you ever had that kind of outlook about yourself? I think it's pretty easy for us to be boastful, to be proud of our righteousness and Maybe what a great credit we are to God. I remember another story Jesus tells about two men who are in the temple who are praying. The one man thanks God that he's not like others and all the things that he does for God. It's really possible for us, like Peter, to be really sure of ourselves and our own righteousness. And so, number one, in spite of our bluster, like Peter, our weaknesses and our shortcomings reveal themselves. I mean, we at some point in our lives discover our sinfulness. At some point, we are brought to our knees and we recognize that we're sinful people and that we fail. Like Peter, number two, eventually we recognize that we are completely dependent upon God, upon the grace that He has extended to us, which allows us to stand in His presence. This was a humiliating experience for Peter. But what must it have been like to be on that shore with Jesus and realize that he really could look into the face of Jesus again without shame? That Jesus was really accepting of him. And that's really the gospel story for all mankind. We all have gone astray. Like sheep, we have gone astray. And He, the shepherd, gathers us to Himself, brings us back to Himself. There's a song that I love that's sung by the group called A Cappella. And I want you to hear about 2 minutes of that song, because I think it expresses what has happened with Peter and what happens with each one of us. Well, He has come to our rescue. We've been rescued from sin. We've been rescued from our failures. As Peter was rescued from his failing on that day. That same rescue is ours. What a great blessing to be children of God, unworthy, undeserving, but to be forgiven. When we fail, let's remember Peter. Let's remember how he utterly failed Jesus after declaring, "Never will I do that." May we learn humility as a result of that, and submission. As we sing the invitation song today, there may be someone who needs His rescue right now. Someone in this room who needs to submit themselves to the Lord. And if that's you, let this song be an encouragement to you. If you're ready today to confess Jesus as your Lord and acknowledge Him, not deny Him in your life, but acknowledge Him, if you're ready to be baptized into Christ and to declare to the world that you want to be His, that's why we're singing this song. Whatever your need is this morning, if it's a need to come back to the Lord, like Peter needed to do, we invite you to do that. Let's stand and sing this invitation song.